and welcome to episode 263 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of MI666, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the last chocolate in the box is Tony Esmond.
And the strawberries. That's the one that's always left, the strawberry flavoured one.
No, it's either the strawberry, the orange, or the coffee. I don't want to make judgments, but who really likes coffee chocolates?
Me.
Oh, there's always one, isn't there? Yeah. Hey?
So you eat all the other ones and then leave the ones
so
you
when you
don't.
When you These buy a bag of like Revels, it's not like roulette for you then. No, you love not, all no. of it.
All the chambers are empty. I'm just eating away. There's no
Oh my
no
word.
Russian roulette on that one.
Yeah. Blimey. Well, fair enough. Anyway, we have another guest this week, folks. And this week we're joined by the creator of the Monster Slaying B-movie loving series, Elsa Dark. It's Will Hazel. Hello.
Hello there, yes. Can I play the stereotypes and I'll be the Highland Toffee?
Yeah, I see. Yeah. We don't get any chocolate mixes down here. It's taken out.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Well, decided to leave. Yeah. That was over.
Is that like the toffee that is like could pull out a filling?
That's the one.
Pretty much. It's only children eat it. Yeah, that's why the kids in Scotland have been no teeth.
Man, it's rough up there.
To anyone in Scotland, we do love you, Anna, and the Awesome Comics Podcast are big fans of you, so just want to say that. Tony Esmond is in no way affiliated with our territory feelings.
I'll take a few quid off Scottish independence. It means my missus has to go home. That's the only thing I'll say.
Oh dear. Anyway, it's been another week of comics, and we're here to send you on the way with another week of comics. And I haven't had a chance to read so much this week. You've been busy
buying stuff, babe.
Yeah, fucking hell.
Yeah, in a rare sort of like insane, I think I'm going to buy myself some books moment. Yeah, I popped to that. Anyone who listened to last week's show knows that I discovered a little comic store in Glastonbury. I got so caught up chatting with the owner that I didn't have a chance to properly browse the shelves. So I went back the week later. I pulled a Tony Esmond, that's what I like to call it. So I
bought
back.
So many books you had to buy, you had to get a taxi home.
Yeah, so and one of the books I'm going to talk about later was on the haul, but there's a book series that I got that I tell you what, on this coming week I had the first two volumes of Black Science, which I'm a big fan of, but I you know when you just fall out of a series for a little bit and you keep meaning to go back to it, you know, in one chunk. And I never got round to sort of buying the trades, or, you know, the trades just kept being added to the wish list. And, got an absolute steal, like, issues, trades 2-7 when I bought them. And proper fantastic deal. I doubled up on... No, it was 1-7, actually, but volume 2 was missing. So I've got a double. I've pulled another Tony Esmond. I've got a double of Volume 1, which I'll probably send out to some lovely listener.
Are we going to stick that in there? Are we going to stick that in the prize?
Yeah, we've got a little competition we're going to talk about a bit later. So, yeah, Black Science will be in there as well. But this coming week, because I've now got 7 volumes of this to read, and I'm hugely looking forward to it, I think I might read a trade a day. I think it might be Black Science Week for me.
Good stuff, babes. Wow. Good stuff like it. Yeah.
Have you ever done something like that? Like just got on a series and just
every
got...
day for Tony. Reading
Yeah. True.
I tell you what, I just read a trade before we came on. I read Slots from Dan Panosian. Fuck me, that's a book. So good.
Really?
Yeah.
What else has Panosian done? What have I
Oh you name it. He's done loads of Marvel, loads of DC stuff.
That's why I know they're
You know him. He does a lot of sort of movie cool kind of noir-y stuff now. His style has changed quite significantly.
Did he do a lot of stuff with the Liefeld crew back in the 90s?
Yeah, he did. He did some Alpha Flight and he did some Image stuff. And yeah, his style's really changed. He's become like him and he's part of that sort of little LA crowd, the cool crowd down there, you know?
Mm. Oh, bloody yeah. Right. It's lovely. It's got some, it's fantastic-y style.
Have you seen his stuff, William?
Yeah, it's really nice. It's very kind of like old school but modern.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Like a
it's
lot.
Got Robert McGinnis kind of style to him, isn't he? Somewhere there's that sort of paper novel thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like if Jack Davis didn't do caricatures, you know, that's the kind of stuff he would do.
Yeah. Nice. Him and Gabriel Hartman aren't a million miles away in style, I'd say, as well. So that sort of place.
Oh right. Yeah. Oh, so that has sort of moved on a bit. So and that's Slots, you say, which isn't going to be your recommend for later, but it will go in the show notes, of course.
Thank you.
Yeah, because we're professionals here. Well, we're not, because we're not getting paid for it. but essentially, we get paid for sponsorship ads. And our sponsor this week is Comic House.
Yes.
I say it like we have a different sponsor any other week. We don't.
We'd be lucky to get any sponsor other than this, to be fair. Let's face it.
Yes. but thank you to Comic House for supporting the show and sticking with us. And they're putting in a lot of good work for the indie scene all over the world, not just the UK. I know we're a UK-based show, but there's creators from all over the world putting their books on there. For those who don't know, if this is your first show, should we apologise when straight away? No, I think we'll wait till the end.
Just wait to see how bad it gets.
Yeah, but for those who don't know, Comic House are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. Because it's not just all about the selling, it's all about the comics, and that's what this show's about, so that's why we love them. If you go to comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on the database. Lots of creators can go on there and they can list their book on there for free and just start selling their hard copy straight away. But they have a brilliant app where you can, they're adding stuff to it all the time. The library is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We love it. And what sort of stuff is on there at the moment, Dan?
There's a whole slew of new stuff. Athelia Volume 2, Blood Brothers Volume 1, Issue 3. There's this chap called Jordan Kroger, and he was mentioned on Twitter about where to put his, he wanted to put his comic on Comixology, and he was saying, how about him? I said, well, put it on Comic House. And he's obviously taken that advice, and he's put five issues of The Fist on there.
Now, The Fist is like you've
reviewed
that.
This. Yeah. If you like Atomic Hercules, you will like this book. It's nuts. There's
Okay, cool.
It's the tagline is the story of a man, his fist, and his wife who has a spaceship, and they go down.
I've read this. I read the first one on your recommendation, man. This is great stuff. Yeah, really good.
So definitely check that. All five issues are on
all
the app.
All five issues, amazing.
Yeah, you've got Symbolism Rewired, more Teddy Boy. We've got to issue 7 on Teddy Boy, okay. Woodland Creatures Volume 1, Jump Scare Volume 2, Death Incorporated Volume 3 by our friend Charles Raymond. Penned Gwyn Vision. Oh god, there's so much stuff on there.
Yeah.
It's really taken a step up again, isn't it?
Yeah.
Comic Cats recently. There's a lot of people on there now, because it used to be we knew everyone, didn't we? Pretty much. But now there's loads of books on there, people I've never heard of, new stuff on there every week. Yeah. It's really gaining some ground, guys, I think.
Country Venezuela, United States, Hong Kong. Yeah, there's loads of stuff coming on there now. Brilliant.
Loads of stuff, yes.
That's weird. I get loads of listens for the other pod from Venezuela. How weird is that?
Yeah.
Is there a big comic industry that we're not aware of in Venezuela?
There is huge comic book industries and movements all over the world that we don't know about because we're in our little bubble. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's the same all over the world, you know, because when you're creating comics or, you know, you get to know that community wherever you are in the world. And we'd love to know what this is like for other people all over the world, by the way. Get in touch with us and let us know, because I find it fascinating, like when we've had creators from Australia or America or just where, you know, Europe and anywhere, and you know, suddenly they discover that there's, you know, other small press communities that are just as welcoming. Mm. You know, because it is a lot, and we've said in the past with the UK we've got a bubble of a UK community, and because we're not a big island, we're tiny. Let's be honest, we're a thumbtack on the planet. So you could turn your head and bump into a small press creator here, whereas in some of these bigger countries, they have to take planes and shit.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
I say, William, there's quite a vibrant small press community in Scotland, as far as I'm aware.
There is, I'd also just like to mention Tales of Mystery and Imagination is also on Comic House on the app. That's my old anthology comic. It's well worth a look.
Nice work.
But yeah, there is. It's like you see all the same faces when you go around the various conventions, and it's a good feel at the conventions. Everybody kind of knows each other. And so it's very varied as well. The kind of comics you can buy, just span so many different genres and so many different kind of I call them attitudes, you know, as to how people.
And
people
are always
approach.
Willing to try out each other. I mean, because I know when you get used to like a comic community and stuff, you're buying each other's books or, you know, this, that, and the other. But there's a when you're in that sort of mentality, there's real openness to trying new stuff as well. You know, I mean, people I've gotten to know, I've picked up their books, and it might not have been something that I would have gotten 5 years ago, and now I'm a huge fan of it. You know, and become friends with it. You know, so if you're a creator who sat behind your table and not really interacting with anyone else when you're at convention, you're doing yourself a disservice because there's loads of lovely people about. You know, I know
mostly.
And then you get us.
But that's part of the kind of like the joy of a convention is interacting with people.
I'd say the last time I spoke to you at convention, William, is you'd forgotten your glasses, so you had shades on, which I thought was quite a cool move.
Oh, that is he's a baller. yes.
I started this stream with shades on.
You did?
That's a good way to just do this strange guy that doesn't know what he's looking at. Anything that was about 12 inches further away from me was just a blur.
Let's not go down that route. But if you want to go down the route of
I've used that defense.
If you want to go down the route of Fantastic Comics, then you should go to comichouse.com, find out more about the 14-day.
We're still in the advert.
I haven't closed it off yet. There's a 14-day free trial with the code Stay Safe, which you should remember because you should all be doing it anyway. And you get an extra month. And also, if you've got any all ages books or anything like that, get them on their own Comic House because they really want to push like the family friendly sort of comics and stuff and setting up so more kids can read comics without having to worry about the filth that the people on the Awesome Comics podcast create. So thank you for sponsoring us. But and now we're finally into the show proper after talking about toffees and God knows what else. See, this show can go anywhere, people, but eventually somehow we claw our way back to comics. I see Dan Vanguard is back and cooking with gas.
Yes, it's all kicking off. It's in the lockdown, I'm struggling to get the comics done. It's so much harder, and my work routine's been absolutely buggered up, and I'm desperately staying on top of it.
Is that because like the full-time job is quite intense, or?
Yeah, the full-time just quite... And when I used to have a commute, I'd have like a solid hour drawing in the morning and a solid hour in the evening. Yeah. But my kind of schedule's all just kind of buggered up now. And I used to be pages ahead, but now I'm like lettering the thing the night before.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow.
It's not ideal. But
when is it? Because I know you do issues and then you have like a bit of a hiatus so you can get you can build up a bit of steam again. Mm-hmm. How long is it before you get that sort of hiatus?
I'm only on page 15, and we've got another 15 to go. Odd, so it'll be 15 weeks.
So, hashtag thoughts and prayers.
I'll chug through it fast enough.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. No one would ever know, Dan, when they look at it, because every page is awesome, dude.
No, I fucking made a real error, and I've got to correct it. There's a moment where a character says, "Right, I'll meet you out on that beam in 15 minutes," and I let it ballooned over the fucking beam.
I remember.
So I got to go and change that. What Wally? Yeah. That's one of the benefits of doing a webcomic. You can go back and change stuff.
Yeah, you? That's true. Mm. Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
When that's improved, that's done.
I'm thinking of doing that with my new webcomic, Sex Cat.
Oh yeah. just changing it all before you even print it.
Yeah.
I do all my lettering first, so that.
Oh do you?
So if there's a lot of dialogue on the one page and it's set in a graveyard, I know where I don't need to draw anything, so there's nothing behind all that dialogue.
I'm currently pitching up lettering El Marvo 2, and there's a panel which I drew a load of detail in and I didn't realise how much text there was, and it just killed a load of it. I should have done that.
Yeah, that was one of the first few comics I did. I realised that as like I spent ages drawing like a bit of the background that I really didn't need to spend a lot of time drawing, and then the next thing you know, I was covering it up with word balloons.
Because you are literally like a one-man band, aren't you? Well, you're doing sort of everything, and it's a lovely book, man. I know.
Really good. Yeah.
So, I mean, we're talking about like those moments where things have gone to print and you've noticed things. Have you had many sort of harsh learning? We've all had those moments, haven't we? I think. Is there anything that still haunts you?
No, not really. There's still the odd wee typo in that slips in. It's always when you actually corrected it, and then you go back into the Photoshop file to make a change, and then it doesn't get updated or something in InDesign. You know, it's like this one wee typo gets through it. Yeah. But, you know, you look at first editions of books and that, and they're full of them. So it doesn't feel so bad about things like that. Yeah,
that's the benefit of a small print run, isn't it? You can change it with the second one.
Yeah, that's it. I think the main thing was for Ailsa Dark. A few years ago, I did the first issue for, I think it was Dunfermline Comic Con, and it was cancelled that year.
Yeah. And I actually had the print run. It got snowed out, didn't it, that year?
Totally.
Is that right?
It was really bad weather. And I had the print run actually printed. And I read it over. And I was quite glad that I wasn't going to the convention, because I just changed the whole thing. I trashed that entire print run.
Oh, no.
What?
Was it a large print run?
No, it was just about a couple of hundred.
Oh,
that's large enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
For a small press, that's pretty like.
Yeah, that's quite for a small press. That's quite a lot. But you know, I read it through, and I went, "Well, no, that's not working," because I'd rushed it all. Because that's the main thing, is we're rushing towards deadlines that are set by conventions.
Yeah, that's true.
So, especially as we've all, I guess, other jobs that we're doing as well. So it's a case of like we're rushing. We've got the day job, and then we're making comics. You know, that's the way I look at it. And the comics, you try and get done what you can for that convention to the best kind of like quality you can do.
There's a certain amount of pressure, isn't it? You put on yourselves as a creator, which surely in some ways can't be healthy. I think some people put too much pressure on themselves when it comes to, like you say, these especially just say a thought bubble deadline, you know, because everyone's releasing something at a thought bubble, aren't they?
Yeah, that's the biggie, isn't it, every year?
Yeah, I
think the battle is being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
And if you've got 5 weeks worth of work and you've got 2 weeks to do it in, then you've got to make a judgment call of saying, am I going to rush this and maybe put out something half-assed?
Yeah.
Or just think, right, fuck it, it won't be ready for then, but I said you can only really release. I say you can only release it once. You can release it multiple times if you make an error. Just reprint it.
And dare I say it? I mean, looking at the silver lining to the cloud. Obviously, this year it has been shit, you know, and you know with the virus and everything else. And obviously, it's been sad that conventions have been cancelled. Very rightfully so, and we're huge supporters of everyone that's doing the right thing. But also, think about it like this. Those books that you were going to rush for that convention, you've now got more time to focus on it, to polish it. Rather than, I mean, you could stick to that deadline as well, but you've just got a little bit more time just to polish the edges. And I think next year we're just, you know, the amount of new books and new ideas that are just going to come flying out, like printed books and conventions as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be an abundance of riches next year, I think, in terms of the new kind of stock. You can see, and of course, with, like, you know, Kickstarters and crowdfunding, there's still loads of stuff. I mean, they're more popular than ever before, as are our post boxes or our email boxes, or, you know, you go on social media and everyone's talking about, like, their Kickstarter campaigns. And certainly, you know, our final Halloween finally got the printed issues of them through. You know, that was a... I haven't had a chance to get that, and thankfully, that, you know, Kickstarter came along and I pledged that, so... You know, comics are always about, but I think in terms of the convention scene, actually, like the physical interaction and new books, I think next year should be seen as being very exciting.
I saw a report today that said they think the second spike is going to be January now.
Really?
So I don't think we're going to get a convention before May.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then just think of all that time you've got to make your brilliant comics.
Yeah,
just look at it like that, rather than, oh God, you know, let's
mask up.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys find this, but I found that there wasn't much of a crossover from my convention customers and my crowdfunding customers. There was only a slight crossover.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was kind of looking forward to getting out there, you know, to Glasgow a few weeks ago with something that would be brand new to them, because even though a lot of them were on the mailing list, they didn't back the campaign. I think in a lot of cases, people like to go to a convention, they like to have a chat with the person that's got the comic and then buy it there, you know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people missing out on that this year.
I think it's people sometimes see it on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, wherever it's going to be, and they think, oh, I normally see them at conventions, I'll just get it when I see them. I'd rather have that person interaction sometimes. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so we've missed out on all that this year, which is a shame.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Speaking of Elsa, I pronounced it wrongly in the past. I'm sorry, William.
That's okay.
Did you want to just give us the pitch, what it's all about, and you know how you came to do this one?
Yeah. I wanted to do something. I just did everything myself to a degree where I was like, yeah, that's really, that's polished, that's professional, that's cool. I wanted to do a single character. I wanted it to be 1970s Bronze Age style. And
now you're talking my language, my friend.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Yeah, I wanted it to be horror. And I knew in the back of my head I had Steve Gerber, Don McGregor, these kind of writers were in the back of my head. And I'm thinking, so I do want it to be quite heavy with the text, but I don't want it to be heavy to read. So I gave myself this, like I say, I scrapped the first run. I realised it was the first issue that I did when I rushed it for Dunfermline. It just wasn't working. And what I needed was a more complex approach to the narrative rather than an easier approach.
Okay.
So I wanted to do a story that was written from three points of view. And it sets up this character, Elsa Dark, who she has a late night YouTube show, which is the equivalent of the late night horror show you would have with the likes of Elvira. Yeah. And she,
which was
presents,
more of a US thing, isn't it? It's more of a phenomenon, isn't it? They get it a lot there. And each local TV station had their own, what's his name? Vanguli, or his name is? He was one, wasn't he?
Yeah.
They had their own one almost in locally, didn't they? Who was like
a local
celebrity.
Well, you go online and it's like, we'd had STV up here, whatever your local ITV station was. If you could imagine, they had some guy dressed up as a monster presenting movies, or some woman in a low-cut dress presenting movies. That's pretty much what it was.
The only equivalent we had here was something I used to watch called Movie Drome. Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, we had
Alex Cox. He was a brilliant. Introduced me to so many things that did.
Yeah, me too. That was a great show. I remember taking them off of the telly on the VHS, you know, and watch these films over and over and over again.
That's the first time I ever saw Rabid, I believe. You introduced it. You made it sound like this sort of quite highfalutin, you know, clever thing. And I watched it. I'm like, oh my God, this is about a porn star.
Yep.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
It made it all the better, though, didn't it?
It really did.
It was highbrow and lowbrow at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's kind of what I was wanting to do with Elsa Dark in many respects. So I made her the horror hostess because that was like her Clark Kent persona. So she, under this persona as a horror hostess in a late night show, she gets people to interact on social media, but she actually gets coded messages that help her. And what she really does, which is she protects the other world people who live in our world. So essentially there's another world, like another dimension out there. And this dimension is like, in mythology, it's always like fairies and all those kind of creatures. I think it was used, Captain Britain, back when it was in Hulk. Remember the Hulk Weekly?
They had the
other world in there, and it was all fairies and all this kind of stuff. And it's been used in lots of different bits of fiction. And I thought, I'm going to use that, but I'm going to make it vampires, werewolves, and all the kind of creatures that we see in movies, rather than fairies and elves and all that kind of stuff. So the idea was that these creatures are living in our world and they need somebody to police them, protect them, and also keep them in order. And that's what Elsa Dark does. And that's basically the premise. And we don't really know much about her. And the first book, Werewolves and Bampots, sets her up so that we can then hopefully carry on to another couple of books that I've got planned, because I'm world building this to essentially take us back in time to find out the origin of this character that hopefully people are going to be invested in.
Right. Yeah, okay. It's great as well.
You can tell from that there's a lot of world building. You know, you've obviously had this mapped out in your head. You know, and that when you're talking about, like, you know, other worlds, and you know, world building is always fascinating to me. And I certainly, at the back of like issue one, that, you know, there's you've got a little bit about the story and like how lofty your thoughts and ambitions for the series are. And even though it is three issues, and I think it's good to have that, you know, because what you've got a huge setup, and like you say, there's the hopes that this will garner an audience and you can keep going. But you've still very sensibly sort of put it to a three-issue a setting, haven't you, really? Where some people...
Yeah. Was that recognisable Dark Horse thing that they've done now with Hellboy? Is that, for, among horror comics, it's quite recognisable now. You do a series of minis, don't you? I think it's quite a good idea.
And I think that, also, that if you've got, if you've got a huge world, I mean, there's loads of people out there thinking, I've got a huge world, you know, I've got A4 binders full of all this, and it's going to be a 50-issue series. We know where that's going.
I think that's what my problem was with the first issue that I did. It's like, it didn't make much sense because there was a whole lot of world I knew about, but it wasn't there in that issue. So I dumped I dumped a lot of the world building that I'd done. I just binned it.
Okay,
man, that's a brave step. There's a lot of people who wouldn't take that step and would just put it out anyway. But that, I'm taking it when you're saying that included the art as well as the dialogue. And
yeah, I think I saved a couple of pages. I was thinking when I was doing it, it reminded me of when Jack Kirby did The Hunger Dogs. Not that I'm in any way wanting to say that about like Jack Kirby. But I knew that he took pages that he did in the 70s and he was trying to incorporate them into stuff that he was doing for that particular graphic novel. So I knew that there was some that I wanted to keep, but I had to try and incorporate them into a style that was slightly different to what it was in that original story. So when I put the first issue out, it's slightly different to the one that was included in the Indiegogo campaign.
Because I've got both, actually.
Exactly the same story, but if you look, if you put them side by side, you'll see that I've gone back and I've remastered a lot of the stuff on it so that it's more up to scratch with the second issue, which is visually the second issue is where I want it to be. Right. You know, it's kind of like I like to see an artist's kind of style grow in the issues, but I figured because I did Indiegogo and we're both going out there together, I had to remaster some of the work on it just to kind of bring it up to scratch with the second issue. Not that there was anything wrong with it, I was happy with it, but you just kind of like you start noodling away at things and you don't want to take it too far, but you get it to a point you go, this is where I want it to be. So
from just talking about what you've changed in the first issue, but to me the most visually stunning thing about the first issue is the werewolves, dude. I absolutely love the design of them.
Yeah, they're great.
There's a full Bernie Wrightson Silver Bullet thing going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, that's my favourite kind of werewolf. It's like, it's why when people have a debate, as they often do in a pub, about the Howling and American Werewolf in London, I will defend the Howling's werewolves as being the better werewolves by far.
I will support you on that.
I prefer that film, especially because the newsreader at the end has still got lipstick on when she's a werewolf.
Exactly.
When she turns into an Ewok.
Yeah. Although that film probably, the end of the film probably had more of an influence on the sequels than any other part of that movie.
The sequels do go off on one, don't they?
Oh, good.
Was it My Sister's a Werewolf? Howling 2?
Yeah,
who's the woman from Battle Beyond the Stars? Who's in? I think she's in Howling 3, isn't she?
Sybil Danning.
Sybil Danning, that's right. Yeah, classic actress. Sorry, Meg. You mentioned Indiegogo. Now, I think you may be our first guest on who was launched an Indiegogo campaign.
Yeah.
How is it? Have you launched a Kickstarter as well, or did you just go straight to that one?
No, I had a look both of them, and I went with Indiegogo because I felt that it was kind of more of an old school horror action comic. Indiegogo at that time didn't seem to be promoting that kind of stuff. They're still not really promoting that kind of stuff. I mean, and I just thought that visually it would work in Indiegogo. Sorry, Kickstarter went promoted. I keep saying the one instead of the other. Kickstarter went really promoting that kind of stuff on the front, you know, the front pages, whereas Indiegogo was. And also Indiegogo gave you, they took less from you and they gave you the option to carry on afterwards with the campaign because you go in demand. And that was a big thing for me. And I thought, well, that's cool. That's all we have in our stuff.
That's exactly the question I was going to ask. Now, I was looking at some Indiegogos the other day and they weren't currently funding, but you could still buy them. And that's how that works, right? I get you. I didn't realise that. That's not a bad idea. I don't know why Kickstarter haven't adopted that as well. It seems quite wise to me for people who've missed it or something, you know.
It does. I still had a finite time to do it and stop it. So as soon as I was ready to start fulfilling, I stopped the campaign because it's a continuing story. I thought I'll do the final
issue. Yeah, seagulls. We've got seagulls as guests this week.
That's me. Yeah, we've got a window open here in Dundee. And it's,
that's cool. Birds.
Are you Dundee as well, man? I didn't realise that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's you're contractually obliged to be in Dundee at some point if you're making comics.
I think you are. Yeah, there's a lot of good comic people there. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
No, I lecture in the college up here, so yeah.
Yeah, that was another question. So are you an art teacher? Is that I can't remember.
Yeah, I teach computer art and design, animation and games development because my industry experience is computer games. I used to be a games developer, so that's my day job.
Because I know when I've chatted to you at conventions, I think Edinburgh, I'm going to say Edinburgh and Glasgow, I've met you at conventions. Is that right? I'm going to say.
Yep, we met in Edinburgh first and then in Glasgow the year later. Yep.
That's right. Because you had, isn't an ex-student of yours a pal now and she makes horror comics as well and you share a table with her, is that right?
Yeah, Bex, she's doing her horror comic and we were hoping to be at Glasgow just a couple of weeks ago with the second issue of her comic and Neil's the Dark. So she was a student of mine and what I did was I let students kind of contribute stuff towards Tales of Mystery and Imagination, which is available now at Comic House. I gave them kind of free rein to kind of like play around with the styles and so on. I think she enjoyed it so much that she started doing her own comic. Yeah, so we all table up together.
Excuse my French, but that's a fucked up comic of hers. It's good, but it's fucking disturbing.
It is, yeah. I think it gets even more disturbing.
What's the name of that book?
Oh, I can't remember that. It's got a woman with a thing across her mouth, isn't it?
Leech or what is it again? Oh, she'll kill me. She'll kill me. As he quickly Googles on Facebook to get the name.
I think she gave me a reader warning when I purchased it. She obviously didn't know me. But
Really? Yeah. That's always interesting though when people put that.
One of my favourite moments was where this guy with his kids came along and he looked at it and couldn't really look at it and then went away. And then 5 minutes later, he came back with his kids and bought a copy. So that was one of my favourite moments. I can't. That's shocking. I should know the name of your comic. It's been a while though. I'm blaming them.
And it will be in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you find out that Will's been
murdered. Clean. I knew it was something.
Clean. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I've got it over there. It's out of reach from where I'm sitting, but yeah, I've got it over there. Yeah, okay. Now, you've also as part of the Indiegogo package I got through from you, you've done something called, is it the Tatty Bogle Man? Is that the name of it?
Tatty Bogle Man, yes.
What does that mean, that word? What is that exactly? That's another Scottish thing, isn't it? Like bam. Yeah.
It's a scarecrow.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah, right. I spell it slightly differently because I wanted to give it a spelling that made it look more like a comic book character's name. So it's Tatty TTIE normally, but I just went with TATTY, so Tatty Bogle Man. It just seemed more like a comic book spelling for the name. I thought that would look good in a 1970s Marvel comic as a character.
Yeah.
And I needed a crypt keeper for the Tales of Mystery.
Right.
And of course, I had to make a Scottish crypt keeper, so I did them there first. And I said to all the artists, just draw me any way you want. I don't care about consistency. I just want your styles with the character. But then eventually I thought, I quite like this character. So I gave him an origin story in Tales of Mystery, which was very much a Wicker Man type, very melodramatic 70s style origin story for the character. And as part of the Elsa Dark campaign, I remastered that. And rather mentally thought to myself, I'll do it in 3D as well.
That's what I was going to ask about. Yeah, it comes with 3D glasses, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I ended up redrawing a lot of the pages because they just didn't work in 3D. Thing. They were too complex or just didn't work. So I redrew the entire strip again. Yes, even some of the panels are the same panel. They are completely redrawn. And I wanted it to be really 70s like. It's got a character in it who reads their fortunes, and anybody who's a fan of Hammer Horror will recognise it's Jacqueline Pierce for the Reptile.
Right, when she had long hair.
Yeah. Well, she's got short hair in it, but I've tried to make her as young as she was when she was in the Reptile. Yeah, so
everyone will know her as Serverland.
Yeah, Serverland.
She did a couple of Hammer Horror films, didn't she? Yeah, back in the day.
Yeah, so I keep, because I tend to use photo reference, which people I know as the characters.
Right.
But every now and then I'll like to drop in somebody and maybe people look at it and kind of go, hang on a minute, I know
if
that.
If you drew Elsa, if you know Elsa Dark, can you just pass me her email?
Okay, I can send you her Instagram. I'm sure I'll ask her first.
Oh God, no! I sound creepy now. Don't, please don't. That was only a joke. But the other thing, I was chatting on camera with, it was shout out to Johnny Cannon, our pal, and I said I've got this book through from William Hazel. They're really good. And I was looking at Tatty Bogleman. I said, I don't know if there's something up with the printing. And we continued chatting something else. And the 3D glasses fell out of the bag, and I just say to Johnny, I'm a wanker. It's a 3D.
Yeah, that was like, God, I thought it'd be easy to do a 3D comic with a naivety. And I looked at all the different ways you could do 3D. If you're doing it with RGB on the screen, you can get some amazing effects done. And you could, I was thinking, coming from the games industry, I thought I'll use a kind of depth map, and you know, playing with lots of different things. But then you try and do it in CMYK, and there's only the one way you can really do it. It's kind of the way I did it.
Right.
But it works. So I was quite happy with it, but I put a 2D version in the comic as well.
For it's both in there, isn't it? Yeah. The it's worth thinking. I don't know, would you guys ever do a 3D comic?
I've never tried that. Honestly, I've never tried it.
I wouldn't have the bottle to do it.
Wonder whether it would work for Sex Cat.
Here we go.
Do you want that coming out?
I think someone got me a 3D drawing pad one time, like with the pens, but I never really tried it out.
It was just a normal pad, Dan. I mean, because the world is fairly 3D.
Yeah. I keep trying to double tap the world to get it come near it. It never works.
Yeah. Oh, no, I tell you what. Do you find, and I can't believe, I am not the only one who's had this.
I fucking did this the other day.
You're reading a normal book and you're like, that's an interesting bit of art. And your brain wants to just zoom in on it. And you put your hand to the paper and just think, what am I doing?
I was drawing and I my fingers went to do the split apart to zoom up, and I was like, fucking hell. It's that hard trained in now.
I'm getting old here. I did some traditional drawing the other week. I had to use a magnifying glass to do the detail because I'm that used to zooming in on it on the Wacom and doing detail, and you're like suddenly back in the real world. Magnifying glass.
I've had it in real life where I've been chatting to someone and I didn't really like them, and I've tried to sort of swipe them to the left to get that, you know, move on to the next one. I just end up pushing them over, you know. Sort of.
Has a similar effect.
Yeah, it does. So you sound like an old school comic fan, William. I know we often like similar things on Twitter, you know, comic covers and stuff like that. Is making comics something you've always done, or is it? Because I've only heard of your comics for, I suppose, sort of 3 or 4 years, but is it something you've done for a while, or?
No, not really. Just Tales of Mystery and Imagination was the first thing I did, and that must have been about, I don't know, 2005 or so. No, it wouldn't be 2005.
So why
2011, something like that.
Why did you grasp a nettle so late? Not saying you're old, obviously.
Yeah.
But why so late?
So I'm that old, I can't actually count backwards from 2020. I just left the games industry and started teaching. So I wanted to keep a hand in something creative that I could make and produce. And comics, is because I love comics, I thought, I'm going to do comics. I'm going to do it on my terms and do the comics that I want to read.
Yeah.
And that was basically what I did. So with the first issue of Tales of Mystery, I just got a couple of mates that I'd worked with before in the games industry. I got them involved to say, would you mind doing some stories for this? And the whole idea behind it was taking public domain stories. So we took Poe and Lovecraft stories because that allowed me to edit the comic, and it allowed us to work out exactly how do you take something and then strip it down to what you need to tell the story visually within a finite number of pages. So it was a really good exercise. So the whole first issue was like an exercise in doing that. And it did well. So I just carried on doing it. I did 4 issues of that. And then Elsa Dark.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, so reasonably new to it, although it doesn't come across that way, man, at all. Yeah,
no, not at all.
But you've just been an old school comic fan for years, since a kid, I'm presuming, are you? Or?
pretty much, yeah. So, like, I remember the first. I mean, I was reading comics before I went to school because my family would read them to me. So one of those kids that you know your family were teaching you to read before you got to school. So the first comic I wanted to buy myself was Spider-Man Weekly, Comics Weekly.
Yeah.
And I saw it on TV. To this day, I'm not sure whether it was an advert or it was being talked about on something on TV.
I think there was an advert, wasn't there? I think there's one on YouTube you can find, yeah.
Is there? Yeah, so it must have been that. And so yeah, I had a standing order for it and my local newsagent missed the first issue because the advert obviously wasn't quick, you know, in time for the first issue.
Yeah.
But from second issue of that comic, and I realised that there was a Mighty World of Marvel was also out, which I didn't know about.
Yeah.
So I quickly, kind of like as a 8, 9, 10-year-old, moved over from the Beano, the Topper, the Dandy into the world of Marvel and DC. And yeah, that was me. That was my go-to for entertainment comics.
Yeah, that was good. They were great days. I was in Mighty World of Marvel and Spider-Man, and there was the Titans as well and all that sort of thing. But
yeah, that was great because you get so many stories in the Titans because they turned it sideways and they had...
yeah, that weird period.
Weird,
yeah,
indeed.
Yeah. But they also, that's where Captain Britain, when Captain Britain's Weekly folded, which it didn't last, to be fair, very long. It jumped into Spider-Man, didn't it, I think? Is that right?
Yeah.
Can't remember now. Yeah. It was a great period of comics back then. I was very much into it. Yeah,
was that the Captain Britain with the red costume? I mean,
yes,
I know
he's
got
best
a red
costume.
With the blonde hair at the top, yeah.
Yeah, the sticking out the top, yeah. I prefer that costume, to be fair. It's my favourite one.
I will disagree.
Yeah.
Although they're,
it's very
they're
kind
they're
of the age,
costumes,
isn't it,
but...
that one?
Yeah. Sorry, mate?
It's very of the age, that one.
Yeah, he had a sort of red stick that extended.
I saw that pose, you know, when he's the classic him and he's kind of like pole vaulting on it, so, ripped off so many times.
Yeah.
As really very well traced, that one.
Yeah, Marvel Contest of Champions. He was in that as well in the original costumes. Pretty good, actually. Yeah, quite like that.
Yeah, I kind of wonder sometimes, it's like, what kind of meeting Stan Lee had with Chris Claremont and everybody. It must have been a case of, like, Captain America's got a shield, what will we give Captain Britain? A pole.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a pole jumping. I remember the buttons. If I used to know which each of the buttons did on it, on
that's
the
right,
handle. Yeah, you could tell what they did. Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes the colourist would colour them, and other times he wouldn't.
That's right. I actually blame that comic series as being the reason that Chris Claremont does that stupid fake English accent now. Because he has to pretend now, doesn't he? I know he was born over here, but he does this accent. It's like nothing like English at all. and he just pretends all the time. And he refers to himself as a Brit all the time in interviews. You're not.
Yeah. Really?
You shiny-headed idiot.
Yeah.
Tony's ongoing battle against Chris Claremont continues.
Yeah. Continues. He's got a head like a walnut. Anyway, continuing on. So what's
I'm
for?
Just going to the John Byrne forum and typing that in.
That's pretty lively, that forum.
I've heard so. It you had to have a special. It wouldn't let you in if you had a Yahoo email at one point. It was really.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's a strange one. But so what's the plan? So as I understand it, Dark was going to be 4 issues, but you've decided you're doing a double size 3 issue.
Yeah, right? I was going to be 4 issues. And then I thought, it just takes so long when you're doing these indie comics yourself. It just does.
Yeah.
And I thought, but people are going to have to wait so long between the campaigns. So it's going to be thinking Bronze Age, it's going to be a bumper-sized double issue for the last one. So it's one campaign, you get the rest of the story. And anybody who comes on that campaign will be able to buy the previous comics as part of that campaign. And I think sometimes with crowdfunding, if it's not a one-off graphic novel, people kind of don't trust the creator until they see the works out there.
Yeah.
So I think with the work being out there now, and it's getting kind of good feedback. People are liking it. So hopefully with the next campaign I can, you know, at least kind of like double the number of eyes that I get on Ailsa Dark. I call it Team Dark. I want people to come and join Team Dark. So I want to have a letters page in the next issue as well. If anybody that's got it wants to actually write me a letter at Terrier Studios Gmail kind of, or even just on Twitter, get in touch with me on Twitter. I'll put an actual letters page in it, and I'm going to give a dark prize to the best letter.
So, oh, okay.
Nice one. We did.
Oh,
hello.
Dan just disappeared.
Dan, we did. He was going to admit something dirty there.
Yeah, Dan, so we did a letters page.
We did, didn't we?
Yeah.
We did letters page. And
we only
the
made
anthology.
Up. We only made up 85% of them.
You gave me. I had the power over the letters page. I got to answer all the questions, and they were mostly filth. To be fair,
I mean, how long was it before I regretted that decision? I can't remember.
A couple of minutes. Yeah, because I got all excited as soon as you said it and said my plans are this, and you went, oh fuck.
if nobody writes any letters for me, I'll probably have to do that myself.
It's not a bad idea. Yeah. Back in the day, not giving anything away, we hadn't set a competition, and I made most of the names up in that one. But there you go. Do you remember? You went to me. I didn't realise all those people wrote in. I said, I made them up.
Since then, we do actually have people.
We do now. Yeah. Competitions are now fair, to be honest about it. Yeah. The other thing, man, I was going to ask you, and I'm quickly going back to the Indiegogo thing, is do you think, I don't see so many Indiegogo campaigns from UK people. Do you think it's more of an American thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like I know there's a group of guys that are kind of YouTubers, the CG UK that are all doing campaigns. So they're definitely out there. They just maybe don't look as if they're particularly like British campaigns.
Yeah, maybe I'm just finding that circle or something. Yeah. I'm just wondering about the customers. Are they mostly American? Are they, or are they sending?
For me, it was 50-50 like a small portion. It was like I was saying, like one out to New Zealand, one to Australia, but the majority of them were a couple to Canada. The majority of them were the US and the UK.
Yeah,
and it's odd. I'm not too sure if there's. I know some people just buy one or the other. I buy based on who the creators are and what the work looks like, you know. If I see a creator that I like the style, I'm going to give their book a big punt, see what it's like.
I tend to look at Kickstarter more than Indiegogo, and I think that's because I've used Kickstarter maybe.
It was a long first for us, and that was it. And
yeah, I don't think there's an Indiegogo app either, is there? I've not seen one.
I don't know. I'm terrible with using these things on my phone anyway, so
I'd say the only one I've ever backed to now, and the first one was you, so that's how I discovered it, because you told me about it at a convention. That's kind of how I discovered it, but I need to explore it some more, because like you said, there's lots of good comics everywhere, and I think
I'm working on there's a lassie in London, she goes by the Twitter Charlie's London, and she's doing a Charlie Chaplin campaign. She's doing so that's actually she's got the rights from the Chaplin Foundation. They're involved in it. I'm doing a one shot for that.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah,
that's need to get yourself down the Elephant and Castle, man. Some of those buildings are still standing.
Yeah,
around the back of Carter Place and all around there. So I used to work literally a stone's throw from there, like across the road from there, and where he was born. It's a really interesting place.
She blogs about it all the time. Yeah. So I mean, that's up there. That's a very kind of British subject to be doing, I think, as well, because it's the story of him, you know, from his young days going on. And I'm doing a one shot that leads into a main graphic novel.
That's interesting, actually. I'm banging to that. I love all that stuff. That's a great film as well, you know, Chaplin. It's a really good film. It's forgotten these days, but it's so good.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen that for a long time.
No, I haven't seen that one. I haven't seen it.
I mean, he's a real hero of Southeast London, Chaplin. He's just one of the guys. The Charlie Chaplin was the big pub. We used to have leaving dudes out and stuff at the Elephant. It was quite a lively pub that was. Bloody hell. Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Blimey.
That's all right. Yeah. Interesting aside.
I never thought we'd talk about Charlie Chaplin on this show.
There you go. Charlie Chaplin and comics. It's coming soon, man.
I was always...
I'm trying to squeeze a dinosaur in somewhere, but she wouldn't let me.
I was always a Harold Lloyd man myself.
Loved Harold Lloyd, man. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. Okay.
There you go.
They did a lot on British TV as well.
They did. It was always in the afternoons, wasn't it, on BBC Two? I used to watch that. Yeah.
The story I'm doing's got Stan Laurel in it, so that's cool, because I'm kind of I'm more of a Laurel and Hardy guy myself.
Ah, nice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, they're great as well. Yeah. Okay. There were used to be Laurel and Hardy comics, didn't there? There's not anymore.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it's kind of...
you don't really have that sort of crossover sort of...
John McIntyre comic.
Oh yeah, get like a
little event. Yeah, the new adventures of Little John McIntyre or something.
Yeah, yeah, or I don't know. Comedy personalities don't really translate to comics really now, do they? Unless it's like, oh yeah, there's this new, like Entertainment Weekly will say, oh, you know, this stand-up comedian's written this comic, and then you get like probably a paragraph about the comic.
Oh god, yeah. Well, Bob Hope had a comic for years. He had his own monthly for years. It's quite a thing. Yeah. I think it ran through to the early 70s, I think.
Yeah.
Do you remember they used to do like the celebrity comics of like the, used to be in Lookin and Radio Times, I think it was, like the three panel things of like, say, the life of Michael Jackson.
Lookin.
And it'd be like, Michael Jackson was born in 19 whatever. And then. And then the second panel were like, he'd be fully grown. And then he sung Moonwalker in 1990. Yeah. Oh, yeah, really getting to the nub of it on this one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you had people who had like some bands like, you know, the Monkees or Shawaddy Waddy or someone like that used to have strips and look in, didn't they?
Yeah,
there's all these sort of thing. Yeah, there's sort of pretend lives of these probably, you know, just coked up pop stars behind the scenes, you know.
What, when they're just hanging around amongst normal people, the norms, as if they ever could?
Wanting to be part of my gang. You know where I'm going with that, don't you? Yeah. There
you go. There's a strip that Kate Beaton does. It's like the crime-solving teenagers. And like, it's like one of those kind of Famous Five things. They go, oh, will you sort this out? And there's just two like teenage lads, and they didn't really give a shit. And they're just like standing there, I don't know, did it? And then it's probably the gardener, he did it.
Yeah.
And they're like smoking fags and drinking.
Yeah, crime solving teenagers doesn't have the same effect now in the age of millennials, does it? Let's face it. Do you know what I mean? Sort of, yeah.
They'll be on their phones. Oh god, that makes
oh, have outrageous. You updated it? Quick, take a picture of me.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Good.
Anyway. So you're well versed with crowdfunding, and obviously the book has done well. So where can people go to like find out more about like Elsa Dark and stuff, and all you got coming?
I think my Twitter's the best place to find me. So it's @Crawford_Hazel, HAZLE, and you just type in Elsa Dark, you'll probably take you to one of the Indiegogo pages. So I've got the new page up, which is a mailing list for the conclusion to Elsa Dark, Werewolves and Bamports. But yeah, I do most of my work on Twitter.
Okay.
No how drama, just comics.
How do you find like marketing social media campaign? Not social media campaigns, but yeah, marketing like crowdfunding campaigns on social media and stuff.
Yes. I didn't realise. I made the mistake when I did the first campaign for Elsa Dark. We were also selling our property at the time, selling our house. And then I kind of realised once I was doing the campaign, you've got to constantly be on social media. Mm. You've got to constantly be trying to get eyeballs on the campaign. So I learned so much from doing it that this time I've got my mailing list out there. It's going to be a few months before the campaign actually starts. And I've got majority of traffic that came to the campaign came from Twitter, and the next largest was from YouTube.
Oh, well, okay.
Very little from Instagram, but to be truthful, I wasn't really on Instagram that much, and Facebook. It was mostly Twitter and YouTube. So I've started doing more YouTube, doing live streams, that kind of thing, and Twitter, and the way I look at it is I get myself out there, people kind of see that I'm an all right bloke and I do good work, and then they want to invest in the crowdfunding. Because at the end of the day, you're asking people to give you their backing so that you can make the book. It's not like going out there and selling it at a convention. It's very much a case of like they're investing in you to create something. So I push social media that way, and that's how I go about it. So everything's, if I see something on social media that gets my back up, I just count to 10 and then go into something else, you know? Keep it
very
all professional.
Wise.
Professional. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. What do you think is about the importance of, like you say, you've got a mailing list and stuff like that. Like, like email newsletters and things like that?
Cause yeah.
Is that a hugely important thing for you to keep in touch?
I think getting the mailing list going is important. I think also it's, but I think more so it's getting some kind of connection there, so you get a core group of people who are customers or fans or whatever you want to call them. Because if you can get that going, then that's something to build on.
Yeah,
and it's however you do that, and you'll get so many people giving you so much advice, depending on how big they are or how kind of like small they are, and so far as how many issues they've had backed, it'll be different advice. And everybody's, if somebody does really well, they are an expert in exactly how you're supposed to do it, you know. So I did pretty much what I wanted to do. So I'm analysing it from my perspective. And I think that if you get a mailing list, don't assume that everybody on that mailing list is going to back your campaign. It's not going to happen. So people will think, oh, I've got, you know, so many hundreds. You're not going to get so many hundreds backers, but you will get a good percentage that will back early. And that's what you want, because you want to get your campaign backed early to hopefully fund it within the first week or two, because it looks good and it's very much perception, because again, people are looking at crowdfunding and their perception of how your campaign doing really kind of like leads them towards making the decision as to whether they want to back it or not. So that's what it is. It's kind of like building this positive kind of good perception in people's eyes of what it is you're doing.
You continue with like the, you know, the mailing list and stuff outside of campaigns and stuff as well? Because I think that's quite important to.
Yeah, well, you'll get something from me in a week or two. This still from the first Ailsa Dark campaign, because I'm also working on a third project. There's a character in the Ailsa Dark called Logos, the green guy with the horns.
Yeah,
he's a banter demon. And he was just meant to be an ancillary character. So he was there just to get the story moving along. But I liked him so much, I wrote a graphic novel with him in it.
the classic, the supporting character who becomes more popular.
But it's a totally different thing. And I got another artist involved and they're drawing it.
Nice.
And I can tell you right now that you getting somebody else to draw your work, it's fabulous.
Yeah,
it's so much easier being a writer. Than doing it yourself.
Easy being a writer. That's why. Yeah,
So I wrote it over to Fortnite and I sent it to the artist just over a week ago. And today, just before I came on here to talk to you guys, I got 5 pages from him.
Nice.
And they're all looking really nice.
Ah, brilliant. Can you say who it is? Or
he's on social media. He's an American guy called Tony Sizzle.
Okay.
Tony Sizzle.
That's a very cool name.
That's a very cool name.
You'll find him on social media. It's for the Deep South, and he's called Tony Sizzle. And I wanted somebody that had a completely different style to me as well, because I thought, although I'm world building, I thought I'm going to spin this character off, and I want people to buy this book that maybe have no idea that I've got other books out there. You know, so he stands alone in his own book, pretty much in the way that it used to be in comics, where you didn't have to buy every single book to follow stories. You can follow my characters in the same world, but you don't need to buy all their books. You just, you know. So, yeah. So it's more of a hard-boiled 1970s pulp paperback sort of novel.
Oh, nice. Just a look at his eyes, you man. Really nice. Yeah, I like what he does there. So, yeah. So he's got quite a style to him, isn't he?
Yeah. It's amazing. So you've already built up like this world for Ailsa Dark, and yet it's expanding even more than you thought it was going to.
Well, the approach is not to build the world. The approach is to build the world around the characters. That's how I realise that's how you do it. So the characters dictate what the world becomes. When I introduced Teddy Logos or Logos, the idea of a banter demon, somebody who could talk to the dead so that you could converse with the dead through him. And then I thought, well, he's a banter demon, so any kind of powers he has got to do with his language, his speech, and that allowed me to think of other things he could do. And then that that's what leads on to more stories in the world building, as far as I'm concerned. What I don't do is decide that draw a nice wee Hyborian age map, you know,
yeah.
And then start working out where things go and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, there's this clan here and this tribe here and all that stuff. I don't do that.
No. I guess in some ways that would, dare I say, water down the main character, because especially if you've got a solo character,
yeah.
The focus has to be all about them, doesn't it? First and foremost.
Yeah. It's got to be all character based. So this is why I did the. I approached it with three different narrators, so they've all got their own story to tell. And I knew that, at least for two of them, like Ailsa and Umair Nawaz, the policeman that's her sidekick, I knew that they could both spin off into so many different kind of stories
based on
starting with them. And they already had a voice. So if I could create three separate voices in this comic and people could hear those voices, I can carry them on in separate storylines.
Nice. Cool. Nice.
That works.
Good stuff.
Yeah. I think that's. I never really thought about that for world building as well, though. Like characters first, but it's absolutely. Yeah, it's very true. I guess. Would you have thought Conan just came about because he just wrote a couple of shorts? Because the Conan tales are very much. Oh, he's here and this happens. Or he's gone here and this happens. And before you know it, do three of those, and then all of a sudden, oh, I think there's a bit of a world here. Do you know what I mean? I think.
Yeah,
I think the first Conan stories he wrote were, you know, the ones where he was a king or he became the king anyway. So he worked backwards, I think, with Conan, didn't he?
Okay, right.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a huge amount there. You could read it on holiday, couldn't you? Most of the books,
pretty much. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's quite a thick book, isn't it? Isn't there like a collected edition?
Yeah, Conan? I mean, on holiday, I tend to read a novel a day. You know, but you know what I mean? It's not. They're mostly short stories, aren't they? Let's face it.
To be fair, I am kind of like staggered sometimes the amount of prep work some people put into their fictional worlds and comics, especially when they've drawn like loads of back matter and they thought loads about the characters and written stories about people who won't appear on page. I just like, part of me is like, if I could do this full time. This may be something I'll do, but I can't as a part-time gig. I don't have the time to.
Yeah, I mean, Hickman's the prime example of that, isn't he? How much work went into that before we did the X-Men?
Yeah, fucking out loads.
Incredible. Yeah.
I mean, it does help when, I guess, if the writer or the creator has an idea of how the world works, sometimes you only have to allude to stuff. You don't have to have it all fleshed out, like Joe blogs over there. And you don't have to know every facet about it, but it's enough to give the reader a kind of inkling that this bigger world's out there, and their imagination can kind of take it as it goes.
Some things are happy accidents as well, I think.
Yeah.
I think Terry Pratchett's a good example of how you can build a world around character. You know, because whenever he introduced anybody that was new in a story, they were always unique and interesting. And then you wanted to know their background. You wanted to know where they came from.
Yeah, and then it becomes a completely different, like that with his books as well. Sometimes a character would just be in one book for a little bit, and then they'd have their own book, wouldn't they? And then things become a completely different kettle of fish when you get a focus on a character, which is why it's going to be interesting to see what this graphic novel's going to be like, focused on a supporting character. I think that's fascinating.
I like to have a touchstone. So for Ailsa Dark, it was Hammer Movies 1970s kind of like horror. For Logos' stuff, it's 1970s road movies in Sam Peckinpah. That's pretty much.
Nice. Right, yeah.
Talking Tony's language.
Fucking hell, he's an interesting character, Peckinpah, isn't he? My God.
Yeah. He'd be cancelled within no time nowadays.
Oh, my God, Is it Susan George got her interview for Straw Dogs? Her and Dustin, him and Dustin Hoffman interviewed her with their trousers off.
Bloody hell.
Oh my God.
In his defense, he was incredibly high in cocaine and alcohol all the time. So
yeah. he was drunk. I think Chris Christopherson directed virtually the whole of Convoy because he was just off his face.
And that's how we've done every single episode of this show.
Yes. Don't do drugs, they're bad.
Yeah. And
substitute Coke for Tizer.
That could be worse, actually.
Yeah. Iron Brew, sorry.
So if you like the sound of any of that, definitely check out Will's Twitter and pick up Ailsa Dark, and then get on board, you know, because it's got werewolves in it, and who doesn't love werewolves?
Oh, and some brilliant werewolves, man. They're not just geezers who are hairy. There's sinewy, fang, fucking ridden nastiness going on there.
The werewolves are all, in the comics, the first two issues, the werewolves are a bit stupid. They're not the brightest, as I say.
Yeah.
The ones I'm going to introduce...
henchmen, aren't they? I'm
going to introduce one in the third issue. It's a whole different matter. That's not going to be a funny, stupid werewolf. Oh. That's going to be, hopefully, an awesome-looking werewolf.
Nice.
All right, look forward to it.
That's lots to look forward to. So stay tuned because we'll let you know when that's available. But we could talk for years about world building, 70s and Hammer horror, and fuck's sake, Hammer horror. I could have a whole fucking show about that. But for now, go forth and check out Elsa Dark because we've mentioned it on the show, and now we've had the creator on to talk about it. So if that won't convince you, nothing will. But do we have, and Will's going to stick with us for the rest of the show because he's contractually obliged.
I'm enjoying myself. It's fun.
Oh, that's good. Man. He's obviously, that cocaine must have kicked in.
I'd have to drink it out when I go, that's what it was.
Don't do drugs. But do listen to the shout outs. Have we got any shout outs, gents?
I got a couple. So thanks to Ian, Nikki, and Tom for the great reviews of Tony Osmond on the Lakes Pod this week and of Atomic Hercules. I think they also reviewed a certain 666 book as well.
Hey!
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I was grinning all over my face.
Yeah, I'd recommend Atomic Hercules as well. That's some high stuff.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. Cheers. Yeah, very kind of you. Speaking of Tribute Press, we have currently got a Kickstarter out. We've got Knockout and Tiger Style, the new Tribute Press book, currently on Kickstarter. It's got about another 10 days to go as you hear this. Adam Phelps on the art and Fraser Campbell's on the writing. Grindhouse Kung Fu movie style, Bronze Age loveliness. And also, if you pledge at the £7 level, you also get a bootleg comic that I've written. So, which is a bit of a return to the Herc universe. Just wait and see.
Those two seem like ideal to cross over with Cockney Kung Fu Red.
Yes, they do, don't they? Although those that have read another comic might understand that something else is happening there. Yeah. No spoilers, but they do. Yeah, totally. There could be a tournament, couldn't there? Yeah, she'd kill them both easy. But you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. Crazy.
Yeah. And speaking of killing it, we also have another drink and draw coming.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. The date has been set, and the last one was just a real good time. Actually, it was just fun. Just a like-minded, lovely people getting around and just drawing and drinking, and it was great. And Butcher, you're going to make it, aren't you?
Yes.
There you go. That's confidence.
Be more definite.
That's confidence, isn't it?
No. Yes. Sorry. Yes. I'm definitely. Yeah. I usually family arrangements have been changed. Let's just put it that way. I do have access to internet text is so shit where we are. If someone's doing something, someone else can't be doing something.
Babes, you don't have to explain yourself. It's fine.
Yes, if you're cam
girl. I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't be defensive.
The only fan stream. The wife can't watch Amazon.
Oh, but anyone out there, if you just want to have an evening of just drinking, drawing, and just having fun, then the Awesome Pod Drink and Draw, which we've tacked our names onto something that the wonderful Tom Curry has been setting up. So huge shout out to Tom for setting this all up. It's all done via Zoom. If you get in touch with him on Twitter, that it's at this Chugglehead. If you want to join in, you don't have to be in for the. You could just pop your head in, say hello, and leave.
Yeah.
You do whatever. 7:30 UK time on the 24th of July, which is this Friday. I did get that date right, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, good. I know time and stuff. And like I say, there may be... Is there going to be a bit of a theme this time? I mean, there's no strict you have to come on and you have to draw this. There's none of that. I'll probably put up another poll about drawing a Kurt Russell film, because why not?
Nice one.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're drawing your own comic, you just turn up and draw the comic on the stream.
Yeah. I mean, the whole point is just bringing people together in the name of comics and fun. So, Tony, what are you going to draw around this week?
The usual.
All right.
We're going to get the... Is it Sex Cat?
Draw an entire comic.
Have I fucked up that name?
No, it is Sex Cat.
It is Sex Cat.
God, if there's a Twitter account for that within the next few days, God help us all.
Come on.
Yeah.
So have a look at Sex Twitter.
No, don't, Dan. The purging you'll need to do on your browser history. Yeah, so join us. It will be a laugh. So, yeah, contact Tom and find out more. He's posting it. There's going to be a post on the Facebook page, etc. as well. And we'd love to see you there. So, there you go. Is there any other shout-outs?
Yes.
Hey!
Galaxy Graphene Alliance. You got after you listen to this, you got about a day to back it. So, get on that. And yeah. The Big Hype Comics are still putting together their anthology. So you'd be, if you want to go in for that, that's submissions are open until the July 31st, looking for 5 to 10 page stories, pictures of any genre to be produced in black and white. I did look in on this and they're looking for more upbeat, fun stories as opposed to kind of, down
Sin City.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Want smiles, not, frowns. And, Reckless HQ, we're looking forward to their Knights versus Pirates, the brand new graphic novel from Reckless Heroes. We launch it on Kickstarter on 8th of August.
I mean, I'm
going to be shouting about that until the time.
You know, you don't want to jinx anything, do you? But that's going to be a slam dunk, isn't it? That's guaranteed, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
If that
might change the game, as in rather than doing floppies, they're just going straight to the trade.
Yeah. Although, you know, they've put in an awful lot of hard work. It's been a long time coming. But yeah, we're looking forward to that. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. If it doesn't get funded in 24 hours, what the hell's wrong with people?
Yeah. Chris's artwork is this fucking goes from strength to strength.
Yeah.
And we say it every year about him. I don't know why he's not being employed professionally to do this, but hopefully people see this and we don't know. You've got to keep him to us. We want him in the small press.
Yeah. Plus, the Gigolo world wouldn't be the same without him. No. And the rest of the Reckless Hero boys, because we know where the bodies are buried. And is that it for the shout-outs?
That's all I got, yeah.
Lovely. Yeah. So you know what time it is. I don't know why I said it like that.
I do. Oh, God.
It's time to recommend some lovely stuff to you lovely people so you can go forth and check out some new comics. Now, who would like to go first this week?
Guess first.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Go on. Yeah.
Right-o.
The spotlight just appeared on him and he was like, oh, God, it's me.
I know, I'm actually standing looking up at it right now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these circle at me. I've got a couple of recommendations. Actually, first, before doing my recommendations, a lot of my kind of like horror comic stuff, I like to look at the old PDFs of the Skyworld comics, like Nightmare and Cycle. And you can find them all online because they're all in public domain. So if anybody is interested in like old horror comics from the 70s, the Skyworld stuff is really worth looking up and Googling and getting some PDFs and CBRs off, because that's my go-to along with Warren rather than EC. And none of the classy stuff, I always go to the really trashy stuff. I just thought I'd throw that in there. I've got two recommendations. First one is on Indiegogo, and it's called Mary Boys, and it's a guy called Carl Stefan. Call him Chop, he's one of my online friends, and it's essentially Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles combined with Father Ted.
And sorry, what a combo. So great.
Stylistically, it's like Brendan McCarthy meets Will Eisner.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and that's really all it needs to get people to have a look at it. It's done really well on Indiegogo. It's in demand, and he's currently put up a tier with a T-shirt that he's got hand-screen-printed tier for T-shirts for it. And the idea is these four wee chaps are like modern-day Knight Templars, and they're kind of like sensei, as if you can imagine, like a drunken priest, you know, for Father Ted, as their kind of sensei. So it's Mary Boys on Indiegogo. It looks gorgeous, and it's all traditional artwork as well. It's all ink washes and pen work. So that's my first recommendation. Give that a look. And then a second recommendation is over on Kickstarter, and it's I always get the words mixed up. It's Zombie Holocaust Vietnam or zombies, but it's zombie. It's Vietnam Zombie Holocaust, and it's George Lennox's comic, and it's been going for a few years. I bought them when they were in floppies, and he's now put it together as a graphic novel, and it's essentially it's like if Lucio Fulci and Oliver Stone had got together to make a movie. Well, I don't know, dropping acid. This is the kind of movie they would have probably made.
Yeah, I think I commented on the cover. It's an amazing. It looks. It's like a movie poster cover thing going on. It looks really nice.
It's a really good sort of like trashy sort of. He obviously like myself. He's into all the video nasties and all that kind of stuff. So if you take a zombie movie and you cross it over with a Vietnam sort of like war movie, this is the kind of thing you're going to get. So it's a terrific looking little comic, and he's already achieved his goal. It's still up there on Kickstarter. It's a Vietnam Zombie Holocaust. It's well worth watching the video. I helped him put the video together, and so that's my two recommendations. I say definitely check out Mary Boys on Indiegogo.
Right.
I don't know if it's going to be in demand much longer. It's really good. Just check it for the artwork alone. It's gorgeous. And George's Vietnam Zombie Holocaust on Kickstarter.
Right.
Nice.
Cool. Nice,
nice.
One.
Nice.
Find those links in the show notes. Who wants to go next?
Do you want to go, D?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I like you, Vince. I backed the Kickstarter for Our Final Halloween.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Issues 1, 2, and 3. I've been a big, is it a proponent? Is that the right word?
Yeah, that's the word. Yep. That's the word.
A big supporter for this one. And I've really enjoyed it. And the third issue continues the story in glorious fashion.
Yeah.
The artist character is Michael E. Graham, writer character Mike Garley, letters and logo designed by Mike Stock, and the cover artist Jess Taylor. Jess, quick shout out to Jess. The covers on all three are just fantastic, lovely stuff.
Yeah.
And they really complement the interior work of Mike Lee Graham. And essentially it carries on the story of I don't want to spoil it for you.
Yeah.
Essentially it sets up this premise in issue 1 and 2, 3 countdowns to what's going to happen in 4. So there's a real big setup for what's going to happen. But essentially there's these characters in the first issue and they wake up in this house, not wake up, but sort of come to in this house, and they're covered in blood with their writing over the wall, and they've realized that they've got to do something about stopping this horrific evil that's going to come out of this house on Halloween. It doesn't all go quite to plan. And in the preceding issues, there's a countdown that pops up on pages of when it's getting nearer and nearer to Halloween, and these forces they're fighting against are getting stronger and stronger by the day. And they're obviously put up against pitfalls and hazards, interpersonal problems. And it's really well done. Really, it's kind of, yeah. I don't want to use that lazy stereotype of saying it's like a 1980s horror film, but it's got that feel of like these young people having to go up against a supernatural force that they're not particularly equipped to deal with, but are doing the best they can. The artwork, oh, it's lovely. Mm-hmm. Every page essentially has about 3 tones. Would you say that's right, Vince?
Yeah.
You may have like look at this one. There's an orange, yellow, and browns, and that's it on this page.
Mike's colour dictates. Use of colour and just it's beautiful anyway. And if you look at his like he does like sort of movie poster design work and stuff, like illustration on his Twitter. Follow it. If you're not following him, you're doing something wrong.
Follow.
He's also a really nice bloke as well. But this combo of everyone on board, it's a dream team for this. But this book is like it's one of the better things I think in the small press at the moment. It's so
really very good.
It's running so smoothly, isn't it? It's just such a great book, I think. And I had the digitals, but I like you, Dan. I pledged to the print. I wanted the print copies. And this
digitals and went in on print.
Yeah, and it's,
I think I reviewed the first issue, but I haven't read it since. So I need to get back in and read the others.
It's so good, and it's so I think it's great what Dan said about the covers, because they're almost unassuming. They're really striking covers, but I like the fact that they all work together. But even the design, the way the logo is and stuff, there's nothing shouting too much. It's letting the artwork and the cover itself do the work, and it just pops. Rather than like badges or all kinds of things trying to get you to read this comic, it's just a beautiful design. This is a great book. great book.
I think these covers would appeal more to me and Vince than to Tony. I don't want to besmirch your name there.
We will besmirch your Tony. We will besmirch you all over your face.
They're more of a graphic design element as opposed to. I don't know.
Sort of pure comics,
I don't want to. Yeah. I don't want to do Tony down like that.
No, that's fine, man. No. We all appreciate different things, don't we? I don't mind at all.
Yeah. So we'll stick that in the show notes. We can get that from hopefully four. I don't know if we'll get that before this Halloween because that's only just around the corner. But interesting, like in Miley Graham's artwork, like I can see the style he's got in one, and it evolves all the way through to the third issue, but it's still the same style. It's not like you look at one and you look at three and think, oh my God, there's a massive jarring difference because the artist has grown. It's grown, but in a very mature and considered way.
Yeah,
it's a fantastic comic.
Yeah,
check it out.
Yeah, definitely. Highest recommend.
Yes.
Go on, V. Do you want to go? Because I want to hear yours.
I'll go next. And this is a book that I read the first issue of on Comixology a while ago, I got the trade in my bumper haul that we briefly spoke about earlier, and it's a series from Image called The Freeze, which for me is a high concept pitch, which sort of sold me. And, you know, I did thoroughly enjoy issue one when I read it. But basically, the entire human population is frozen by a mysterious global event. And by this, it's not all cold, just everyone is just frozen in place. Like, just completely, you know, they're still alive, but just... If someone pressed pause on the human race right now, that's what happened. All except Ray, and only he has the power to unfreeze them. Now with the fate of the world in his hands, he must figure out what is going on, how to set things right again, and answer the question, does everyone deserve to be saved? I mean, the first series, I say post-apocalyptic. It has that sort of feeling of people surviving in a world after a major event. We've seen lots of these sort of things before. You know, whether it's electricity being taken out of the world or a zombie event or, you know, some sort of virus or all these types of things. And this was just quite a unique one of doing it. And that was why I gave the first issue a try. And I did thoroughly enjoy reading the first issue because it wasn't sort of over the top and a bit. It's not schlocky. It seemed to be going for more of a character piece. And there were great moments like... Because for this guy, he continues as normal, and then he just sort of turns around one day, and everyone's just frozen in place, and he wonders what's going on. And it's only when he bumps into someone and accidentally sort of touches them that they come back, they sort of wake up, as it were. And the story goes on and develops, and you see, like, he thought, and there's a lot of internal narrative, and he thought that it was only localized to his area, because it felt like a sort of Twilight Zone episode. You know, that he didn't quite know what was going on until he looks outside and he sees, like, the traffic jam is just all, you know, cars are just piled up and there's a plane that's just fallen out of the sky because everyone, you know, it's like that moment in Endgame, or not Endgame, Infinity War, isn't it? Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen this. just the ramifications of when something major happens to people, what happens to the planes that are in the sky? What happens to, you know, traffic and, like, when people just cease to exist or cease to continue functioning, you know. And so there's those ramifications, which I thought it's always quite dramatic to see those sort of things. And those scenes are handled quite well. But the reason I bring this book up, I read it. The volume is 1-4. Issues 1-4. And I enjoyed reading it. There were things that I thought could have been done differently, or some things I was like, maybe that's a little bit rushed. It didn't go in directions I thought it was going to go in. And it starts, it does that classic sort of story. It sort of jumps ahead to almost like people sort of breaking into buildings and having to sort of rescue people or wake people up, and you think, oh, this is where we are now. Flashback to when it all started. Although that's quite interesting, but that doesn't seem to go anywhere in the, you know, that just seems to be a storytelling device that's just been used. And there were some things that didn't quite work for me. It's a strange thing to talk about, because I did enjoy reading it, I read it. And I thought I can see what they've tried to do there, and certainly it's a lovely book. The creators are. It's written by Dan Wickline, art by Philip Sevi or CV, letters by Troy Pateri, and it's a top cow part of the image line.
Okay.
And the book looks lovely. There's some certain panels where there's and it's more to do with like cars and stuff. There seems to be some photo reference, but a lot of it has this sort of it's a very clean line, and like a lot of it is a very dialogue heavy book because it is a lot of people talking through different things, like should we wake up this person, who should we, you know, who shouldn't be woken up, and there's a lot of morality things going on. There is also a storyline in it where they realize that someone that they've woken up is a serial killer. And I thought, oh, this is when we're going to get into the meat of this story. This is going to be a long game sort of thing.
Mm.
And that the resolution of that happens very quickly and wasn't very satisfying to me. I don't know whether it's just not my taste. It might work really well for some people. And that's why I'm like, it seems to be doing some things right, but there's a lot of, it seems like there's a few shortcuts that I thought could have been developed, but I don't know. There seems to be only one volume of it. If it ends at a point where it feels like it should be continued, but I did notice it says to be continued with a question mark at the end, which I think is quite strange.
I think that's just a description of comics these days.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so, you know, maybe this is as far as it goes. It's a decent little read. It's on Comixology. It's only £3.20 at the moment for four issues, so that's not too bad for a trade, actually. So you'll get a decent read out of it. And like I say, I would be interested to see what other people think of it. This was the concept alone is worth exploring, but I'm not sure if they went in the right route to it. Another thing that got me, and this is purely about this, the print collection, because you know we all love a kind of collected edition of trades, and I don't know whether this is a Top Cow thing, but it just felt like they just chucked all the comics together, like, and it's you've got the story and then you've got some covers and some sketches and a page layouts, you know, seeing the pencils to the finished colors, that's always nice, and certainly some inks of the cover, and there are letters in there with these. I remember from issue one there was a letter from the writer talking about what they were planning to do or what they'd like people to think about during the series, which was nice to read. That's in there as well as a couple of other letters, but it just feels like this extra material has just been chucked in, like someone just copied and pasted, just put that at the end of the book. And it also has a preview for another book called Infinite Dark, which I've heard the name of, but I haven't read it. But
what, in the trade?
In the trade, it's got like a.
It's a bit strange, yeah.
It's got like an 8-page sort of preview, if you know what I mean, of this book.
Really?
Yeah, and it's just sort of there, and it sticks out like, is this supposed to be here?
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. That really stuck out to me. But I don't know whether that's in the digital volume, if you get that, but certainly in the trade, it was. It felt a little more like
that's a bit naughty.
Just put it together. You know, just put all the issues back to back, and then just stick all the other stuff at the end, which, you know, does it a bit of a disservice, really. Even though,
yeah,
know,
a little bit, yeah,
yeah. I would recommend it because I want to know people's opinions on the way the story goes, because I don't want to give away spoilers. There's stuff that wasn't satisfying to me, but I need to talk to someone about it. Do you know what I mean? Do you ever have that story where you're like, this bothers me, but is it just me?
As I've told you can talk to me about anything, you know that, don't you?
Yeah.
Anything.
Do I need to see someone about that, Tony?
Need to see me, talk to me about it.
Okay.
I can write it on a toilet wall, whatever you
Uncle,
tell me
just Uncle gets
me.
Tony,
okay.
Should bring that feature
no we're
back.
Not bringing that back.
Yeah, that's a great feature.
God. So the freeze. Like I say, I love these, looking out for these little series from like Image and stuff anyway that seem to be quite high concept, but sometimes they go completely under anyone's radar. And the cover itself is just really cool. If you just look at the cover, it's just a It's a nice little. It's almost a movie poster in itself. So look for the freezer if you see it. I picked it up for an absolute song, but that's because I like adding to the bookshelves. God, it's gonna kill me.
You need to buy a bookshelf after today, mate.
I know. I've actually. I think I'm almost out of space.
Yeah, I've just bought another 2 bookshelves for study.
Yeah. So from that one to Tony's recommend, what have you got, sir?
Right, okay, just in preparation, if everyone can just Google Victory Point, Avery Hill, I want you to just have a look at it, because I want to talk a little bit about the art and just see what you think about it as well before we get started. So it's Victory Point and it's Avery Hill. It should come up. Just do the Google Images thing. You should come up with some of the images, but we'll talk about that in a second. But it's been a while since we've reviewed an Avery Hill. It's been a while since we had Uncle Dave on. We used to get Uncle Dave on for a bit of advice.
We should
get Dave back on. Love those guys. They're really good guys. And to be fair, I'll be honest, and I put this in a review I wrote of it. I haven't been super feeling it for a while. I think it's maybe just books that are designed for other people, not quite for me, grumpy 37-year-old man. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of...
Sorry, carry on.
Thank you. I've not really been feeling it. But this one sort of struck my interest because I'm a fan of the creator, which is Owen D. Pomeroy. And it's between the Billboards and British Ice, which I think we spoke about the end of last year. It came out through Top Shelf. It's a sort of long-standing book he told me about for a couple of years, actually, and eventually come out. I think that's a problem with the publishers. You get a long slate on some books. So it seems like we've had 2 books very quickly out of Owen, which are both very intricately drawn. So the story is, it's a hardcover. It's 80 pages. It's 160mm by 210mm, to be specific. So it's sort of smaller format hardback. As I say, full colour, $14.99, which is a pretty good price. Here's the story. During one summer, we follow Ellie as she returns to the coastal town of Victory Point. In the bright sunlight, she arrives by train to the place that she grew up in to visit her family and see other people and stuff, wander around. As she walks around the town, it is a singular architectural vision. We watch her revisit her past. Does Ellie still feel like she belongs there? And will visiting her hometown refresh something in her that she's much lost? So it's a kind of, I made that up, that's not off the back of the book, that's just how I felt about it. But it follows this girl, Ellie, and she arrives off a train. Now, he's a cruel creator, Owen, because I don't think Victory Point exists. I think he's completely made it up. Have you got some images of you in front of you there?
There's an isometric page, which is absolutely glorious.
Yeah, so the geezer knows his architecture, he knows his landscapes, he knows his vanishing points, he knows how to light. Just the cover, if you've got that, it's a beautiful...
The lighting on that cover
is
astounding. The use of the shadows, the way the shadows sort of move, it feels so natural, and yet everything is so clean and inked, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It reminded me a little bit of Port Merion and a little... less of a ramshackle way, where it's a single architect has designed this town, and we see the odd building like this. It's got a sort of a cross between a British seaside town and maybe like a Spanish or Italian town up a hill, you know, with the whiteness of the buildings and stuff. But it's I like to think the book, if you saw this book sitting on a table in a posh estate agent's or, you know, a cafe or something, you might think, oh, that's like a book of photographs of the area. It's got that sort of feel to it, you know. It's one of those printed on hardcovers. But when you look at it more deeply, sure, it is that lovely view out to the sort of the lovely blue of the sea and the landscape and the cliffs in the distance, with the town in the foreground. But it's also, you can see Ellie there standing there looking out to sea. So what it actually does, that cover, it actually tells a story, which I'm quite impressed with. I think that shows her, she's a little bit lonely, you know, she's a bit quiet. She's come back to a town that is it's not a haunting with a big H. It's a little bit of a haunting feeling to her returning to the town. I don't know if anyone ever did that.
It looks like a ghost town. You know, you see. I mean,
yeah, it does a bit. Yeah, it does a bit. There are, as you read on, there are people wandering about, but that certainly gives that implication from the cover, doesn't it? Yeah, most certainly. And she walks about, and there's people sitting there at cafes, and she meets a lady she used to remember as she gets off the train, and she wanders around, and she talks to people, and she's a little bit uncertain of herself, and she's a little bit she says things, quite the wrong things, and she eventually goes through and meets her father, and he talks to her, and he's building a boat, and he says, are you going to stay to watch me sail the boat out? And she says, no, I've got to get back, I think, to London, I think, where she lives. And there's a certain sadness in there. There's a certain, I don't know if anyone here went to university or college, or when they first left home and went to a job in another city or something like that, and then maybe when they got some time off, they returned home, and returning home always seems a bit different, doesn't it? There's a different sheen to what you know, the familiarities that you were cycling your bike around that town as a kid. And it's different, isn't it? And I think that's very much what she does here. She goes for a skinny dip in the sea, and people have changed. And she comes across this woman, and she comes across this woman and she's chatting to her, and this woman has opened a cafe. And I actually think this woman is a future reflection of what her life could have been, if you see what I mean.
Gotcha, right. Yeah.
I have to admit, to when I first read it, I found it a little bit empty. I'll be honest with you. I found it not platitudinous. I just found it sort of it echoed a little bit, but wasn't enough for me. It's only when I went back into it and I reread it, and I was speaking to Ian Loxton about this, and he said, just ease your brain and, you know, relax into it. And I did that, and I enjoyed it much more. I think one of my main problems with it, have you got any of the images there that have got the faces of the characters?
Yeah, they've just got little pupils for the eyes.
Yeah. It's like dots and lines. And for Owen, that's something Owen does. He doesn't over-render faces. Well, he doesn't render much at all. But I think when you're dealing with something that is so intricately and beautifully drawn in the landscape and the architecture and the streets and the cars and the shops and everything else, the faces of people seem a little bit blank, I suppose, is the way I'm going with it.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I found I would have liked to have seen possibly more from that.
But
I found
in some ways, to play devil's advocate, you know, you were struck by the faces. I know they're quite simple.
Yeah.
But if they had just as much detail as everything else, they might have just become faded into the whole. Do you know what I mean? Whenever
I know, and I think I wrote in the review, mate. I know, I see what you're saying. I wrote in the review that I think they're a counterpoint to the intricateness and the noodling. It's not noodling at all. They're just the detail in the background and the foreground and that isn't the people. I think there's that. It does speak to it. There is a real stylistic choice that he's made.
Image where he's got the character profile, and then she has a wind in her hair and she puts her head back and her eyes are shut, and there's real life in the character in that frame. And I'm thinking it's probably an intellectual kind of like a concept that he has, where maybe it's the surroundings and everything else, it's how they imprint themselves in the character.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And I included that image in the review, actually, because there's a real sense of freedom. You know, she's a young kid and she's probably, you know, she's not long out of university or whatever it is, and she's got a job in a bookshop and she's feeling the wind in her hair and she's completely free. She's not struck down and, you know, weighed down by the that we all are.
There's a small smile as well. The panel before, you know, there's almost a vacant expression, but then, you know, you look at it and you immediately know what the character's feeling, because we've all felt that at some point.
There's a little bit of a deadness to the eyes occasionally. He manages to show emotion. There's a sort of smile and stuff like you say. But I would have liked to have seen a bit more. When she meets her father, is this older, grey-bearded guy. You know, he's been you know, building a boat and planing it down, ready to sail it. And I'd like to have seen something more, perhaps. I think maybe there. But I understand the choices he's made. I'm not him, and I nowhere can I draw as well as him ever. But it's a pretty impressive book, nonetheless. I found it, especially in the second one, it played on my mind. I like to think about things before I write reviews and before I talk to you guys about them. And it's only played on me a bit, actually. It's a choice. Yeah. Owen is not a young female straight out of university, and neither am I. But it has an insight into that life that is comparable to us all, I suppose. Mm. Yeah. And the concept of never being able to return home is a concept we all feel, I suppose, sometimes.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's a funny one. He carries on this whole facade of there being this town and this. I think there's a quote from an architect called, I'm just getting it, M.L. Schreiber. If you Google M.L. Schreiber architect, it comes back to Avery Hill Publishing. So I think the verisimilitude of this book is pretty impressive. You know, the appearance of reality and stuff. It's clever. It's a beautiful thing. I'm glad I pre-ordered it. It's one of those things where you pre-order and you think, oh, well, that looks great. I love Owen's work. And then I completely forgot about it, and then it arrived through the post. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like you and that, don't you?
Yeah.
So like I say, go over to Avery Hill. It's Avery Hill. Oh, I've got it here now. Just bear with me while I get it. It's
the big cartel was the one.
AveryHillPublishing.bigcartel.com, and you can find it. It's only $49.99. It's pretty good for a book, actually.
Yeah, that's good.
This is why I'm into this company. This is why I love their stuff.
There's also a bundle of their spring four books for £40 as well.
There you go. Pretty good. Yeah, I like this. It's a sedate relaxation. There's no one punching each other. You don't have to punch each other all the time, do we?
No.
Yeah. There's something about it that I really like, and it's not overly busy, and it's the colour's great as well. Yeah, I love the colour. Yeah.
I think I'll definitely get my hands on this.
The shadows on the side of those buildings are just beautiful stuff. Yeah. Lovely. There you go.
Nice one.
Lots of different books to check out and lots of discussions to be had, hopefully, about said books. And that's what we want, people talking about books and just sharing the love. I don't know why I said it like that.
I'll tell you what we didn't talk about is the fucking competition.
Oh, yes. Yeah, do you want to do
yes.
that?
Yes, so before we sign off, we have a competition. It's an exciting one. And Dan Butcher, over to you.
It's going to be within our group. We haven't done one of our little draw-offs in a little while. It's because this one's been on the launch pad and we're kind of working on it now. But essentially, we're going to launch a five-phase awesome comic podcast group comic creator challenge.
And, nice
and said. Yeah, more details forthcoming. But essentially, what we're going to do is, from the ground up, we're going to get everyone in the group to come up with a name for a character, for a series, or a name for a comic. And through that, through the group, we're going to make a logo. We're going to write a synopsis of the story. We're going to design the main character, and then we're going to draw a cover. And essentially, we're all going to kind of pitch in and vote what we like the best, and then we're all going to kind of move forward with things. And I thought it'd be a good exercise to sort of see how you work with this principle and working with a group and other people's ideas and selling your idea and seeing how it'll go down. So for instance, if we came up with like a magic type character and you had to make as a letter, you had to make the logo, the masthead for the comic, how would you approach that? What decisions would you make? So it's going to be lots of design ideas. It's going to be sent for writers, letterers, artists. Everyone gets a crack of the whip at this. And there's going to be prizes for four of the phases. The only phase we won't be, it's phase one, where we as a group come up with character names. And I think what we'll do is set up a poll in the group. Everyone's going to come up with a name or a title for the comic, and then the group will vote, and that's what we're going to go forward with.
Yeah. So nice. So it will be one sort of character or whatever it will be, and then we will be working through the different phases of whatever that is. And everyone's different versions of it. For instance, the wonderful thing about characters is we all know what Batman looks like, but you know, a Paul Dini Batman looks very different to a Brian Bolland Batman. So that's the joy of it. And
so to give you a kind of idea, on phase one, it'd be the name or the character or the comic name. And phase two is going to be shot to the writers to come up with a synopsis for the character or the comic based entirely on the name. You won't know what you're going to come up with until you get the name. And we're not going to be claiming this character for use by us. It's just an exercise in creativity.
Yep. And, you know, and if you create something that you want to put in your portfolios or you want to do whatever, you can do whatever.
You go for it.
But the whole point of this is to have fun.
We got some prizes, haven't we? We got some prizes.
Yeah, so we're looking for. Yeah, I think this came about during
a show,
and Dan's gone away and thought about it. So, and it will be on the Facebook group, Awesome Comics Talk,
on Monday the 20th.
So, go to Facebook and have a look at it there. We'll probably find some ways to cross pollinate it with like Twitter, etc. If you don't do Facebook, but if you could probably go to that Facebook page, find out, and then get in touch with us. And we'll be able to sort it out. But it's going to be a great fun. And get involved. I mean, the art threads are brilliant anyway. But just a comics creativity thread that involves everyone.
We're going to try and keep this relatively serious as well.
Yeah. So if it's going to be, you know, if you're going to drop some sort of ridiculous, just because we're silly, the comics we like and we read normally aren't very silly. Yeah. So. You know, so and you, but you could be funny with it. You can do whatever.
Yeah, you can do a humor comic, but don't do like
Sex Cat is copyrighted.
Yeah. That's Tony said. Don't. We'll come after like with the might of our lawyers.
Vince's smelly butthole, the comic. We don't want to see that.
Yeah, I'd quite like to see that. To be honest with you, but that's taken copyrighted as well.
Yeah,
scratch and sniff edition.
It's a scratch and sniff pop up book. Who would have thought?
I'm being attacked by close up brown eye man.
Oh god. If you want to send any complaints, you can email us awesomecomicspod at gmail.com. Likewise,
Acerdark at gmail. Yeah.
Likewise, if there's any events or comics stuff that you want us to shout out on the show, yeah, email us there, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at @theawesomepod, where these two have got the keys to the car at the moment, so you know they can tweet up. Even if you just want to say happy birthday to Dan Butcher, who is now legally allowed to drink. Wonderful.
Thank you.
That was an old laugh, Dan.
Yeah. Everything is nowadays fucking old.
Oh, God. Oh,
tell me about it.
I'll put a downer on the show.
Yeah.
When I get to my 40, do you know what I mean? It's going to.
Yeah, I know. you got a good 15 years away from that, Tony, so you're right.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
If you can do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Join the group Awesome Comics Talk. Never mind the competition, it's a fantastic community of people that just talk about comics, making them, conventions, just lots of different threads going on there all the time. So just, yeah, it's a great, yeah, and people from all over as well, so get involved with that.
Just comics, that's all we want to talk about. Want to talk about comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening to us. Wherever you found us, whether it is on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen on iTunes, thank you very much. Subscribe and leave a review and just get the word out about the show and more indie comics. If you listen to us on any other networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what are the networks we on, Tony?
We're on Pod Whisper Network.
That seems dodgy.
Everything I say sounds dodgy.
It does indeed. It does indeed. But you know, when you're not sort of saying things dodgy out loud, where can people find you online, etc., Tony?
Tributepress.bigcartel.com for all your not safe for work needs, and Ezohyz on Twitter.
That's not safe for work comic needs.
Well, just generally, I do things that aren't safe for work.
Dan, where can they find your lovely face?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice. You can find me shouting into the void on Instagram and Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can read my Instagram comic, which is going up daily on Instagram, funnily enough, for an Instagram comic. If you follow at Black the Comic, that's BLAK the Comic. If you just want a bit of strange, ethereal, monotone sword and sorcery, yeah, I've got you covered.
Oh, I like today's with just the single figure in the darkness. That was good, man. Really like that. Yeah.
I don't know where it's going, so or do I? That's dramatic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So our lovely guest, come and save us from the blankness that I just left in this show by letting people know where to find you and Elsa Dark and your brilliant comics.
Yeah, find me on Twitter for the most part. It's at Crawford_Hazel, and Hazel is Hazle. If you're on Facebook, you'll get me at William Crawford Hazel. We'll get you my YouTube and Elsa Dark on Facebook. You should be able to find us. There's a page for her on Facebook. And failing that, Terrier Comics, do a search. You'll find me somehow that way. Yeah.
Good stuff, man.
There's just so much social media out there.
Yeah, isn't it?
So thank you very much for listening, everyone. And thanks to our guests for joining us this week. Thanks very much for having me on.
It's been a blast.
No, it's been good, man. Yeah, I love talking Bronze Age stuff. Yeah, right up our alley, mate. Yeah. Great stuff.
And to you lovely people out there, thank you very much for listening. Go forth, read loads of comics, and just stay safe and healthy and be sensible. Wear your masks, you fools.
Yeah.
And especially you, Bruce Wayne, because otherwise people will know, like, you know, you know what I mean? If he doesn't wear his mask, then people will know. Tony, did you not know?
I was the only person in the shop wearing my mask the other day. I know it's not in law now.
Yeah, but you were robbing it at the time.
It is up here.
Naked otherwise.
Yeah. Well, when you listen to this podcast, it will be.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, from one Justice League to all you lovely people out there, go forth, have a brilliant week, read loads of comics. From Dan, Tony, William and myself, stay safe, stay healthy, and what else should they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Butcher.
I know.
What?
Totally left me, smoked me there. I was left on the starting line.
Oh my word! That is, look at Tony's. I mean, Tony's literally left the show. He's that happy with it. Bye, everyone. Yeah, I know. Bye. You are, Tony. You're always in our hearts. Bye, everyone.
See you later.
See you guys.